So picture this. It's 2.00 p.m. on day two of this massive 132-day sprint. You have this absolute mandate to launch two entirely new websites by Friday. You are just staring down a brutal deadline,
Right.
and suddenly the power goes out. I mean, your whole house goes completely dark.
Oh, yeah.
The router dies. The only light in the room is just the glow of your laptop screen. And the battery indicator is already starting to tick down.
That is the nightmare scenario.
It is. And on top of that, you have a hard stop for a middle school band recital in like exactly 4 hours. Now, for the vast majority of developers, that exact sequence of events, that's game over.
Oh, absolutely. They fold the laptop.
Right. They blame the infrastructure and they just take the afternoon off. But for you, that specific chaotic constraint is actually what triggered the most brilliant architectural and design pivot of your entire week.
Well, because it forces a total shift in cognitive processing, right?
Yeah.
When you remove that illusion of infinite time, you strip away the luxury of over-engineering.
Oh, I like that.
You can no longer sit there and debate the philosophical merits of a 12-layer tech stack. You have to look at the raw materials right in front of you and ask, what is the most direct path to a shipped product before this battery hits zero?
Yes. And that is exactly the energy we are tapping into right now. So, welcome to your custom coaching deep dive.
Let's go.
Today is Wednesday, May 13th, 2026. This is day three of your epic sprint to your 50th birthday. You have exactly 129 days remaining to build your 50 website factory.
The clock is ticking.
It is. And our mission in this session is very specific. We are stepping in as your business coaches to really pump you up, dissect those massive technical wins you pulled off yesterday, and strictly lay out your battle plan for today.
Right.
We are looking closely at your day three engine build blueprint for a double launch.
To do this properly, we're synthesizing a very specific stack of your own documentation.
Yeah, the source material.
Exactly. We have your day two in retrospect log, your day three engine build blueprint, and of course, the foundational website factory system manifesto.
Right.
But before we get into the tactical checklist, I really need to recalibrate your framing for a second.
Okay, lay it on me.
So you're spending your days writing code, spinning up Astro components, deploying to Cloudflare, right?
Yeah, in the weeds.
Right, in the weeds. And it is incredibly easy to get tunnel vision and start thinking that the websites are the final product, but the websites are not the point. The factory is the point.
Wait, I want to challenge that right away.
Go for it.
If the websites aren't the point, why are we, agonizing over their deployment? Why not just build a single massive monolithic platform?
Well, because a single platform is a single point of failure.
Ah, okay.
And it's a single thesis on what the market actually wants. The factory model exists to feed Trust Core. Every single website you launch in this sprint is essentially a highly calibrated revenue probe.
Revenue probe.
Exactly. You're launching a spoke out into the internet. Every time a user interacts with a form, every time an SEO experiment ranks, every time a content batch drives a
And
click.
all that data.
Yes, that behavior flows back as structured training data into your pipeline, your automated spoke-based conversion pipeline.
Right, the ASBCP.
Yeah. The websites are just the sensory organs of the machine. If you keep your focus on the factory level, you aren't just building a portfolio of domains.
No.
You're building an intelligent, self-sustaining ecosystem that actually learns from its own traffic.
Okay, that makes total sense. The factory requires raw data, and the 50 spokes are basically the
That's
harvesters.
exactly.
But let's look at the immediate reality of today. You have a massive checklist for day three. So why are we forcing you to stop, put on your headphones, and listen to this analysis of yesterday's log before you write a single line of code today?
Right. Why not just dive in?
Yeah, why not just wake up, drink a coffee, and start typing?
Because momentum without reflection is just velocity in the wrong direction.
Oh man, that's
If
good.
you just wake up and start hammering out code, you're just running on habit. You really have to understand the specific mechanical reasons how you won yesterday.
So you can repeat it.
Exactly. So you can manufacture that exact same type of victory today. Yesterday, your log proved a fundamental law of engineering.
Which is.
Constraints breed shipping velocity. By reviewing the log, we codify the architectural decisions that worked, and we isolate the friction points that slowed you down.
Okay, so let's break down the reality of day two, because the timeline of chaos here is just an absolute masterclass in shipping under pressure.
It really is.
As I mentioned, it wasn't some pristine, undisturbed 10-hour coding marathon.
Not at all.
You had 5 actual working hours, and those 5 hours were violently split up. You had a morning school drop-off. You lost power at 2 p.m.
Right.
You had the hard stop for the band recital at 6:01 p.m.
And that is the reality of being a solo founder with a family. You cannot put your life in cold storage for 132 days, right?
All right.
The sprint has to accommodate the chaos.
And despite that chaos, just look at the astonishing output. 8 separate commits, 2 entirely new sites, launch cost and parent care, scaffolded from scratch and successfully deployed to Cloudflare pages. A complete, unplanned, aesthetic rebuild of your entire design system. And running on this crazy parallel mental thread, you got the Handscript MVP pipeline working end-to-end.
Which is incredible. But I want to isolate the infrastructure win first, because it really sets the foundation for everything else.
Okay, where are we looking?
Look at your 8.44 a.m. commit. Commit 5A66C37. This was the exact moment the repository officially became a monorepo.
Right.
You created an NPM workspace at packages/shared.
Yeah, I see the workspace set up in the log, but I want to understand the restraint here.
Okay.
You shared the Sprint Math utilities, you shared the Beehive email form ID, and you shared the core branding logic. But you specifically and deliberately bypassed the temptation to create a fully shared Astro layout component.
Yes.
Why? I mean, when you're building a factory of 50 sites, shouldn't the very first move be to create one master UI component that every single site just inherits?
You would think so, right? Yeah. But that is actually the most common trap developers fall into when trying to scale early.
Really?
Yeah, it's the illusion of DRY, don't repeat yourself.
Right, DRY principles.
If you build one master Astro component and have 50 sites inherit it, you create this immediate, brittle, tight coupling.
Ah, I see.
Imagine you're on site number 4 and you realize you need a slightly different Flexbox layout for the header navigation to accommodate a wider logo.
Okay, yeah.
If you change that shared master component, you risk silently breaking the layout of site 1, 2, and 3. You end up terrified to update your own code.
Oh, wow. So by restricting the shared workspace to purely logical TypeScript functions and constants, you eliminate that visual coupling entirely.
Exactly. You get 80% of the leverage with like 20% of the risk.
That's smart.
Sharing the Beehive form ID means you only have to update your API key in one place. Sharing the Sprint Math means your countdown timers are globally synced across all the sites.
Right.
But keeping the Astro markup localized to each individual spoke site gives you total visual freedom. You completely solve the risk of the Vite collision.
The Vite collision.
Yeah, where shared UI dependencies conflict during the hot module replacement in development. You solve that before it even happened.
That's amazing. I look at that architectural decision, and I look at the power outage, and I see a direct correlation.
Oh, 100%.
Time pressure acts like a vice grip on your brain. It just squeezes out the over-engineering. On day 1, you had a full, uninterrupted 10 hours. You had time to think, time to browse, time to doubt yourself.
Time to debate.
Exactly. On day 2, you had 5 fragmented hours. The constraint became the discipline. You couldn't afford to sit there and debate polyrepo versus monorepo architecture for 3 hours.
No, you had to make the NPM workspace function before you had to leave for the recital.
Right. And we see that same forced momentum in the parallel victory you achieved yesterday with Handscript.
Oh, the Handscript MVP. Let's talk about this, because this wasn't even supposed to happen this week.
Not at all. The brief for Handscript is wild. A user uploads a photo of their handwritten notes, the system extracts the glyphs, and it generates a downloadable custom TrueType font file so they can type in their own handwriting.
It is a technically dense pipeline. I mean, you are chaining together 3 complex, totally distinct systems.
Right.
First, you have the upload handling. Second, you're passing that image to Claude's Vision API with an incredibly strict prompt to isolate the vector coordinates of the handwriting.
Uh-huh.
Third, you're piping those coordinates into a FontForge subprocess to mathematically construct the kerning and generate the actual TTF binary file.
And originally, your 132-day roadmap had week 3 entirely blocked off as a build from 0 week, just to see if that Handscript pipeline was even possible.
It was a massive question mark on the calendar.
A high-risk week. The kind of week where a solo founder can burn 4 days fighting a phantom API bug and just lose all their momentum.
But you didn't wait for week 3.
No.
Yesterday, amidst the power outages and the deployments, you got that MVP pipeline working end-to-end. Upload to Claude, pipe through FontForge, trigger the download.
It's so impressive.
This is how a factory CEO operates. You do not leave existential technical risks lingering on the horizon. By getting a rough, raw version of that pipeline functional on day two, you completely altered the risk profile of week three.
Yeah, you really did.
You turned a speculative, you know, can we build this week into a highly predictable, polish and productionized week? You basically bought yourself future time.
That is the infrastructural foundation. The monorepo is clean. The future risks are mitigated. But here is where yesterday's log gets truly fascinating.
Oh, I know where you're going.
Because at 8:49 a.m., you made a mistake. A very logical, completely understandable mistake.
The AI obvious aesthetic trap.
Yes. You shipped the first iteration of Launch Cost and Parent Care using the exact same visual aesthetic as your main Trust Core hub.
Yep.
You used the dark hex 0A0A0A backgrounds. You used the electric orange hex FF7A1A accent buttons.
The developer look?
Exactly. You used JetBrains mono fonts for the text with those hairline bordered cards and all caps mono pills.
And when you looked at those sites at 11:00 a.m., you actually noted in your log that your first thought was, these look fine.
Fine. Man, fine is the most dangerous word in product design.
It absolutely is. Yeah. Fine is just the absence of an immediate objection.
Right.
It is what AI-shaped work feels like before you have clearly identified the emotional disconnect. The AI gave you clean code, the layout was responsive, the contrast was mathematically correct, but it completely lacked a soul.
And then the 2:00 p.m. power outage hits. You physically have to step away from the monitors.
You take a quick nap while the house runs on backup batteries.
And then the power kicks back on at 3:05 p.m. You sit back down, you open the local host for parent care, and you have this massive epiphany.
Yes.
You look at the dark mode and the electric orange, and you realize this signals developer toy.
And this is a huge breakthrough in audience empathy. Visual design is a subconscious language,
right? Oh, totally.
The main hub is designed for builders, engineers, and creators. When a developer sees dark mode and a monospace font like JetBrains, their brain immediately associates it with their IDE, with terminal windows, with deep work.
They feel competent.
Exactly. They feel safe.
Yeah.
But you have to step back and ask yourself, who is the user for parent care?
Right. It is not a 25-year-old software engineer.
No.
It's likely a 52-year-old adult. They're probably sitting at a kitchen table at 11:00 p.m., totally overwhelmed, Googling, what questions do I ask a home care agency? Because their mother was literally just discharged from the hospital.
Think about the cognitive state of that specific user. Their cortisol levels are peaking. They're in a high-stress, emotionally vulnerable situation.
Yeah.
If that person lands on a website that looks like a cyberpunk developer tool, their brain rejects it. It feels cold. It feels unnecessarily complex.
It's just jarring.
In Google's terminology, elder care is a YMYL niche, your money or your life.
Yeah.
And in a YMYL niche, trust is the only currency that matters.
And developer dark mode does not convey trust to a terrified 52-year-old. Not at all. So you realize the branding is completely wrong for the target audience. But you have a massive constraint. You have a band recital in exactly 3 hours.
The clock is ticking again.
You cannot spin up a Figma file and spend 3 weeks running a branding sprint. You have to fix it now.
Right.
And the way you solved this is honestly my favorite part of the day two log. You didn't just ask ChatGPT for a quick color palette.
No, you went much deeper.
You deployed deep research models in parallel. You commanded Claude Design, Perplexity, and ChatGPT to act as a senior product design committee and brief you on what trustworthy consumer utility sites actually look like in 2026.
You engineered a synthesis of specialized intelligence. You tasked Perplexity with finding contrarian case studies. And it came back with financial brands like Wealthsimple, highlighting the modern demand for editorial, human-centric imagery over flat vectors.
Incredible.
You tasked ChatGPT with typography pairing specifically tailored for the Adobe ecosystem. And you used Claude Design for the heavy mathematical lifting of the color theory, specifically requesting OKLCH target palettes.
Okay, wait, I want to pause on that term, OKLCH, because it is crucial to why you are able to move so fast.
Yes, it is.
For a long time, developers just used hex codes. Why is prompting an AI for an OKLCH palette fundamentally superior to asking for hex codes when you're building a design system on the fly?
Well, hex codes like that 0000A are fundamentally hardware instructions, right?
Right.
They just tell the screen how much red, green, and blue light to emit. But human eyes do not perceive color in linear RGB. OKLCH is a color space designed around human perception.
Oh, interesting. What does it stand for?
It stands for lightness, chroma, and hue. When you tell Claude, give me a background color, and then give me a text color, With hex, you are really just guessing if there is enough contrast.
Right, you have to test it.
Exactly. But with OKLCH, you can mathematically lock the lightness. You can say, keep lightness at 95% for the background and 20% for the text. Lock the chroma low and just sweep the hue.
Wow.
It guarantees perfect WKA accessibility contrast on the first try, regardless of what color the AI suggests.
That is how you established the 50x50 design system V1 in minutes. You didn't have to tweak colors in a visual picker. You just laid down 15 named Astro components. You instituted a warm paper foundation.
And you brought in deeply intentional typography. You stripped out the developer monospace fonts for the reading text. You locked in source serif 4 for the authoritative headings.
Why serifs?
Serifs carry a subconscious weight. They mimic traditional print journalism and legal documents, which instantly establishes authority.
Ah, I see.
Then you paired it with Source Sans 3 for highly readable body copy. And you restricted IBM Plex Mono strictly to micro labels and truss strips, providing technical precision without overwhelming the user.
From there, you generated the specific palettes. You created the Ledger Ink Blue palette for launch cost to signal, you know, financial stability, clarity, and institutional trust.
Perfect.
And you created the Willow Sage palette for parent care to signal growth, calm, and health.
But the empathy pivot didn't stop at the typography or the color mask.
No, it didn't.
At 4.99 p.m., you were looking at the hero image you had generated for the parent care site.
It was a classic AI-generated placeholder. A picture of a warm cup of coffee and a handwritten checklist just sitting on a wooden table.
It is the safest, lowest friction image an AI will default to when you ask for a picture representing a checklist.
And you looked at it and you pushed back on yourself. You literally noted in your log, this is lame.
Yeah.
You realize that a coffee cup conveys, this is a website about checklists. It absolutely does not convey, this site understands the pain of an adult child stressed about their aging parent.
The image was visually competent, but emotionally bankrupt.
So you went to fall.ai, you used the FLUX dev model, and you spent exactly 7.5 cents to fix it.
7.5 cents.
You prompted for a documentary-style editorial image of real intergenerational people, an adult daughter and an elderly mother sitting at a kitchen table looking at a document together.
I really want you to internalize the mechanics of why that 7.5 cent investment alters the entire trajectory of that domain.
Okay, let's hear it.
We talked about the YMYL classification.
Yeah.
The user is in a state of vulnerability. When they see a coffee cup, they feel processed.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they're interacting with a content mill.
Right.
But when they see an image of a daughter and a mother that looks like a 35 millimeter documentary photograph complete with natural lighting and slight imperfections, their mirror neurons fire.
Oh, wow.
The image basically says, we see you. We know the exact kitchen table conversation you are dreading. Here's the tool to help you navigate it. You buy trust before they read a single word of copy.
That level of visual and emotional architecture executed in under an hour before walking out the door to a middle school band recital. It is just staggering.
It's the factory mindset.
But, you know, visual trust means nothing if nobody can actually find the website. You needed Google to trust it, too. And that requires a completely different kind of architecture.
Yes, it does.
Which brings us to the structural win you codified on day two. The nanocluster strategy.
The visual layer is the paint. The nanocluster is the wiring inside the walls of the factory.
Let's unpack this 1+2 structure, because the SEO sources in your playbook are very strict about how to build sites that survive in 2026. Think of the nanocluster like a funnel trap. Explain the exact mechanism of this 1+2 configuration.
So the rule you codified is that every new spoke site you launch in this 132-day sprint must ship with exactly one commercial utility page, tightly bound to exactly two supporting informational pages.
Never more than that at launch.
Never more than that at launch.
So for the specifics you shipped yesterday, Launch Cost now has its core commercial calculator page, supported by a slash hosting cost page and a slash stack tiers page.
Yep.
Parent Care has its core commercial checklist tool, supported by an a slash agency questions page and an a slash independent versus agency page.
That is the structure. Now, we have to look at the defensive SEO rationale behind this, because the temptation, especially now that you have deep research AI models integrated into your workflow, is to just generate a massive footprint instantly.
Right. I mean, I can hit an API right now and generate 100 highly detailed articles about elder care in 10 seconds. Programmatic SEO is the trendy play. Why not flood the zone? Why restrict yourself to just 3 pages?
Because flooding the zone is exactly what triggers Google's scaled content abuse algorithms.
Oh, right.
Think about it from the perspective of Google's search engineers. A brand new domain is registered. It has a domain rating of 0. It has 0 backlinks. And on day one, it magically publishes 102,000 word articles.
That looks suspicious.
It perfectly matches the signature of a spam ring. The algorithm will immediately sandbox the domain.
It's the difference between bad programmatic SEO and actual topical authority. Bad programmatic SEO is generating 1,000 identical pages that just swap out the name of a city. Plumber in Chicago, plumber in Boston.
Exactly. The search engines know that trick.
Good programmatic SEO is what you are doing, building a core dynamic calculator that processes unique variables and surrounding it with highly curated decision frameworks.
Because Google does not evaluate websites based on keyword density anymore. They use semantic understanding engines, specifically models that generate page embeddings and site embeddings.
Embeddings.
Yeah, they convert your website into a high-dimensional mathematical vector. If you generate 100 thin, repetitive pages, your site's vector looks shallow and scattered.
Makes sense.
But if you publish 3 deeply researched, highly relevant pages that perfectly interlink, you create a dense, authoritative vector cluster.
And the internal linking is the grease in the funnel trap. The 2 supporting pages exist for 1 primary reason, to capture informational search intent.
Right.
Someone types independent caregiver versus agency into Google. They land on the supporting page. But instead of reading it and bouncing back to Google, you have wired the site so that every internal link acts as a chute, sliding them directly down into the commercial checklist tool. There are no dead ends.
Which brings us to a critical catch you made at 4.09 p.m. You realized that your internal linking was entirely broken.
Yes. You had the inline tool CTA components rendering beautifully, but every single call to action button was pointing to a dead route. You were moving so fast that you literally forgot to connect the plumbing.
But the constraint of the log forced you to review your commits. You caught the error.
Thank goodness.
You systematically rewired every spoke header and every inline tool CTA. You enforced the rule that every single page in the cluster must reach every other page in exactly 1 click. You sealed the funnel.
It proves to the user and to Google's crawlers that there is an intentional human architect behind the factory. You aren't just spraying content into the void. You are building a highly functional utility.
The foundation is poured. The monorepo is safe. The design system is mathematically sound and emotionally resonant. The nanoclusters are fully wired.
Yeah.
We have analyzed the past to understand your velocity. Now we pivot to today.
Day 3, engine day. Wednesday, May 13th, 2026, you have 129 days remaining. I need to make the stakes for today crystal clear.
Let's hear it.
Friday is the double launch. If the core logic engines do not ship today, Thursday becomes a frantic scramble of bug fixing, and Friday's launch inevitably slips into the weekend. And in this factory, we do not miss Friday launches.
No, we don't. The scaffolding is up, the paint is dry, but right now the websites are hollow.
Yeah, they're just shells.
Today is about prioritizing the Tier 1 must-ships. We need to build the core reusable site templates for the factory. Not the aesthetics, the actual functioning logic engines.
I am going to give you a direct non-negotiable command for your morning. The specific 90-minute needle-moving task that you will tackle the exact second you open your editor is the launch cost calculator engine.
Let's define the exact technical parameters of that 90-minute block so you aren't guessing when you sit down.
Okay, what's the schema?
You are building the slash calc interaction state. First, you must establish the input schema in TypeScript. You need to map out the exact variables, team size, tech stack complexity, paid distribution channels, office overhead, legal and accounting setup.
And it cannot just be a visual form. You have to build the range math module. The sources in your playbook are emphatic about this. A calculator must have transparent, explicit assumptions.
Yeah.
You can't just ask for inputs and then magically spit out a number like $5,000. You have to show your work.
Because transparency is the foundational block of topical authority. If you cite the Bureau of Labor Statistics for the average developer wage, if you map out average SaaS pricing tiers for the stack, if you explain exactly why forming an LLC in Delaware costs what it does, the user trusts the final output.
Right.
If the math is just a black box, they assume it's a lead gen scam.
Exactly. The calculator needs to be reactive, live result updates as the user types, zero page reloads, and the final state needs to render a result card component and a highly detailed breakdown list.
I want you to understand why we are isolating this exact task for your first 90 minutes. Why not start by writing the blog post? Why not work on the analytics integration?
Because writing prose is entirely subjective. You can sit there and tweak adjectives for 4 hours and feel like you've accomplished absolutely nothing.
Exactly. Strategy and momentum dictate that you start with pure logic. The calculator is a bounded math engine.
Mm-hmm.
It either mathematically functions or it throws an error. It is binary.
Yeah.
If you build that range math module and get a green continuous integration win like a passing test suite in your terminal, within the first hour of your day, you flood your system with dopamine.
Oh, that's the best feeling.
You set a dominant, aggressive tone for the rest of day three. You prove the machine works. Ship the math first.
Okay, so you crush the 90-minute block, the calculator is humming, the math is tested, you grab a quick lunch. What is the afternoon objective?
The afternoon is dedicated to the parent care checklist engine, the slash check interaction state.
Now, this one is structurally different. It isn't just crunching numbers. It's an assessment tool.
Yeah.
You need to build out 12 specific questions across 4 distinct domains: daily living, medical needs, financial readiness, and support network. And it requires dynamic conditional follow-up logic.
It cannot be a static dumb web form. If the user answers that their parent has a recent history of falls, the engine must dynamically surface the next 2 specific physical safety and mobility questions. The tool have to feel like it is actively listening to the user.
But the most critical technical requirement on your blueprint for this afternoon is the client-side PDF export.
Yes, the export.
Hold on, let me push back on this. The blueprint demands a client-side PDF generation with 0 server round trips. That sounds like a massive overcomplication for day 3.
It sounds like it, but...
I mean, why not just capture the form data, ping a standard backend API to generate the PDF, and send the file back to the browser? You could write that server function in 10 minutes. Why force yourself to build complex browser-based Canvas rendering today?
Because in elder care, privacy is not just a feature. Privacy is the product.
Oh.
We go back to the YMYL classification. This is deeply sensitive, emotionally charged data. People are terrified of inputting details about their parents' declining cognitive state or physical frailty if they suspect that data is going to a corporate database to be sold to insurance brokers or retargeting advertisers.
Oh, wow. So if you send it to a server, you instantly trigger their defense mechanisms.
Exactly. By building the PDF generation entirely client-side, using a library that runs exclusively in the user's browser memory, you ensure 0 data leaves their device. You eliminate the server round trip entirely.
That's brilliant.
And because you engineer it that way, you can explicitly state in bold text on the interface, your answers never leave your device. We do not store your data.
You establish this impenetrable legal and emotional moat. It respects the user's vulnerability. And frankly, from a factory operations standpoint, it is vastly easier to scale because you don't have to secure and manage a massive database of hype-adjacent personal information.
Right. You eliminate a massive vector of operational risk while simultaneously maximizing user trust. That is elegant engineering.
So tier 1 is locked: the math engine and the privacy checklist. Now we move to tier 2. The stretch goals.
If you dominate the engines early.
Right. If you dominate early, or if this spills into your Thursday morning block, you have content goals. You need to write the actual prose for the 4 supporting article stubs you set up yesterday.
We are looking at roughly 800 to 1200 words per article. About 4,000 words total across the 2 nano clusters.
I can literally feel the anxiety rising as I say 4,000 words. For a developer, staring at a blank markdown file and knowing you have to write 4,000 words of authoritative content is just paralyzing.
It really is.
How do you stop yourself from falling into the perfectionist failure mode and blowing an entire day on one article?
You fall back on the factory playbook protocol, the minimum useful launch standard.
The MULS.
You are not trying to win a Pulitzer Prize for elder care journalism. You are trying to provide enough semantic context for Google's vector embeddings to understand the cluster and enough plain language value for a human user to confidently click your call to action.
So you are going to pair write this with your AI agents. You provide the structured outlines, the AI drafts the bulk, and you edit for tone.
Make it honest. Make it useful. Strip out the anxiety.
If you adhere to the minimum useful launch standard, generating 4,000 words of highly structured prose should take you less than 4 hours.
easily.
You can always refine and expand the articles in phase two of the sprint once you have actual traffic data telling you what people care about.
And alongside the content, tier two includes the TrustCore media polish that got deferred from yesterday's chaos.
Right.
You need to finalize the automated curation pipeline cadence. You need to add the privacy and source attribution footers to the master layout. And you need to attach the media.50x50.dev DNS records.
Those finishing touches are what elevate the project from a collection of isolated pages into a coherent professional network.
Absolutely.
And then we hit tier three, the unblockers. I'm speaking directly to you right now. We need two very specific things from you to unblock the analytics today, and I promise you it will take less than 10 minutes. Do not defer this.
First, we need the GA4 measurement IDs injected into the environment variables. You can create one master property with multiple data streams or separate properties, but we need the tracking initialized so the factory can actually harvest the data.
Second, Search Console verification. You cannot afford to mess with individual HTML meta tags every single time you launch one of the 50 spoke sites.
No, the absolute most scalable path is a domain property verification. You drop one single DNS TXT record at the 50x50.devzone apex.
Just one record?
Just one. By verifying at the root level, you automatically blanket verify every single current and future subdomain. You solve Google Search Console authentication for the rest of the 132-day sprint in 3 minutes.
All right, let's zoom out from the terminal and the code for a second.
Mm-hmm.
We really need to talk about the daily operating system and your factory hygiene.
Oh, this is so important.
Because you are the engine that builds the engines. You are running a machine, and you cannot let the biological hardware fail. I'm looking at your morning health check metrics from the day three blueprint.
They are placed at the very top of the blueprint for a reason. They are leading indicators of technical failure.
You operated on 5.5 hours of sleep yesterday. That is a glaringly weak signal. The target is explicitly set at greater than or equal to 7 hours. You cannot sustain a 132-day marathon on sleep deprivation. It will inevitably destroy your decision velocity.
You are treating your biological hardware worse than your server infrastructure.
Wow, that's a great way to put it.
You would never run a production database at 99% CPU utilization without implementing cooling measures. When you sleep 5.5 hours, your brain does not complete the necessary cycles to clear cognitive buildup.
It bogs down.
It is the biological equivalent of thermal throttling. Your reaction time slows down, your frustration tolerance drops, and you will introduce bugs into the code base simply because your working memory is impaired.
And look at the hydration metric. You only hit 8 ounces of water yesterday. That is a fraction of what a functioning human needs.
It's nothing.
The target is immediately bumped to 20 ounces today. Drink your water. If the biological hardware crashes, the entire factory shuts down. It is a single point of failure.
Which brings us to a non-negotiable operational requirement, the walk.
Yes, the 45-minute audio-only walk. I know the temptation when you are behind schedule is to just stay glued to the chair and power through.
Yeah.
How do you justify taking 45 minutes away from the keyboard on engine day? How is walking actually building the factory?
Because building a multi-agent system and architecting nanoclusters requires deep subconscious untangling of highly complex logic.
Okay.
When you are staring at an IDE, your brain is in execution mode. You are focused on syntax.
Yeah.
When you step away and walk with no email, no Slack notifications, no active inputs other than an ambient podcast or pure silence, you activate your brain's default mode network.
That is where the magic happens.
It is where disparate ideas connect. That is where you subconsciously solve the Monterey-Povite collision. That is where the realization that dark mode equals developer toy bubbles up to the surface.
I love that reframing.
The walk is not a break from your work. It is the highest form of cognitive architectural work.
It is not a break. It is processing time. Now, regarding the actual code hygiene, let's review the TrustCore standards for today, because speed cannot come at the expense of stability.
Right. You have engineering standards CS01 through CS10 rigidly enforced via your verify gate, linting, formatting, strict TypeScript checking, and automated test suites.
These are not suggestions.
They are non-negotiable.
You must include module doc strings on every single new file you create. You must maintain small atomic commits. One logical change equals one commit.
Yep.
If you write the range math module, that is one commit. If you write the unit test for that module, that can be part of it. But do not mix a commit for the math logic with a random CSS update to the footer layout. Keep the Git history immaculately clean.
And finally, we must emphasize ethics and voice. The playbook is incredibly explicit about the operational boundaries. No fabricated timestamps in your public journal or your vlog content.
Yep.
The documentation of this sprint must be a rigorously honest reflection of reality.
No personal identifiable information of your family in the codebase or the copy. Use generic terms like wife or son. Absolutely no addresses.
Good call.
And regarding the brand voice, especially for the supporting content, use plain language, quantify the benefits of the tools clearly, and never, ever adopt an anxious or fear-mongering tone to drive conversions.
This paramount on the parent care site, you are stepping into a complex arena. You must position the site as an educational guide, an organizational tool.
You're right.
You are not a doctor. You are not an elder care attorney. Do not give medical or legal advice under any circumstances. You must actively encourage professional consultation within the copy. This ethical boundary protects the vulnerable user, and it protects your factory from massive legal liability.
Okay. We have laid out the wins, the architecture, the 90-minute needle mover, the stretch goals, and the biological imperatives. We're coming to the end of this coaching session. Let's pull everything together into a cohesive mindset.
Let's do it.
I want to remind you of a highly specific decision you made yesterday that demonstrates incredible operational restraint. You had the launch cost site running locally. It looked great, but you decided not to buy the launchcost.dev domain yet.
Which is fascinating because the domain is only $15. The capital cost is completely trivial. So why intentionally delay the purchase?
Because you are actively forcing the metrics to earn the purchase. You are deploying the site to the subdomain launchcost.50by50.dev, and you are keeping it there through week one.
Okay, I see.
You established hard, uncompromising targets. The tool must generate greater than 500 unique visitors, successfully process 20 complete calculator interactions, and capture 5 email signups.
Real metrics.
If the tool hits those exact numbers, it proves market viability. Only then does it earn the $15 investment and the 301 redirect to a custom domain.
This specific discipline is the exact difference between a passionate hobbyist and a factory CEO. A hobbyist buys 50 custom domains on day one because clicking buy on a registrar releases a massive hit of cheap dopamine. It feels like progress, but it's just spending money.
Exactly.
A CEO deploys capital and operational effort strictly when the market provides a validated behavioral signal. You are ignoring the dopamine. You are sticking to the systemic plan.
And that leads perfectly into the ultimate goal of this entire endeavor. It is stated right there on page one of your playbook. I want you to hear this clearly. By September 20, the target is not a specific count of websites. The target is to become the kind of person who can repeatedly, predictably turn ideas into live, useful, measurable assets. That identity is worth more than any one domain.
You are not just building 50 websites. You're designing a 132-day crucible to forge a new proof of identity. Every calculator you code, every checklist you deploy, every cleanly documented commit is undeniable evidence that you are a launch machine.
You are systematically removing the friction between thought and deployment. I want to leave you with a final provocative thought to mull over when you take your 45-minute walk today. Look past Friday's launch. Look past the next 100 days.
What's on the horizon?
If this 132-day factory works perfectly, if you actually succeed in building a self-sustaining ecosystem of 50 fully converting nanoclusters, all autonomously feeding structured behavioral data back into your trust core pipeline, what exactly does day 133 look like when the machine can finally run itself?
That is the vision. That is the architecture of freedom. That image should drive every single line of code you write today.
You know exactly what the stakes are. You have the blueprint. You know exactly what you need to do. Hydrate. Go open your code editor. Dominate that 90-minute launch cost math engine block. We will see you on the other side. Keep shipping.